more. Baby, it's no lie. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it, come in no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got a lot going on this week. We've got a Supreme Court Justice Kennedy that's retiring, and so President Trump will be able to appoint that. He's going to be announcing that after July 4th weekend. That'll be on July 9th. I believe he'll be announcing his pick, you know, and so that's going to be quite interesting as to who he's going to pick. He said he's not going to plan. He doesn't plan to ask any of them about Roe and Wade, the abortion ruling way back, and he's under pressure from the conservatives to pick someone on the conservative side. Gorsuch was his last pick that went in, and so it's going to be interesting to see exactly what he does come up with. We've got Alex Jones talking with Roger Stone on Thursday about that pick, and this was a real exclusive, according to Alex, about what inside information they have, and they're pointing towards Andrew Napolitano as being the president's pick. But here's, listen to this. This is Alex Jones and Roger Stone talking about who may be picked or who might be at the top of this group of five. And I think there's two ladies also included in that group of five. So listen to this real carefully here. This is Alex Jones and Roger Stone on this last Thursday.
Roger, the big Supreme Court issue, so much more that's going down, but you mentioned Phil Mudd, used to run counterterrorism operations. He was a CIA infiltrator of the left, brought in by Mueller to try to spy on the FBI. He's a really bad dude. He's always calling for the president's death. I'm not a macho guy. You know, I don't talk about stuff that I won't back up, but Phil Mudd talking about killing the president and how he needed to be violent and all this crap. At a certain point, and the Justice Department doesn't have the will to indict him, this is a war. He's an enemy combatant at this point. And I don't know why different defense intelligence, Marine Corps intelligence, the Army, why they're sitting back while Mudd does this.
It's really quite extraordinary. If you said that you were going to kill Barack Obama, I think you'd have a visit from the Secret Service within hours, if not minutes. But there's a double standard here. This guy openly threatened to kill the President of the United States in a TV interview. Where's the outrage?
And he's still doing it. He's saying, we're going to take him out. So I like, as a citizen, I feel derelict. I'm not going to do this, but I feel like getting in a car and going to Virginia, man. That's my president. That's my country. If everybody else is going to stand down, Mudd, you better watch your ass.
Well, now you sound a little bit like John Brennan. Look, this is unbelievable that he can get away with this. But it just shows you the media double standard.
Well, I'm not saying I'm doing anything to Mudd. You got a guy on TV saying he's going to overthrow the government, he's going to kill the president. I'm just saying, I mean, I've had people threaten my family and stuff. I've sued them. I mean, you know, a bully said I'm going to kick your ass. I met him out in the playground. I just don't understand it.
It is a little hard to fathom. I do think the big news, though, and we were ahead of this curve here on InfoWar, is the retirement of Justice Kennedy. Now, I reported late last year that Kennedy was next to go, other than Ginsburg. But ironically, with the appointment of Judge Gorsuch, who had been a clerk for Kennedy and for whom Kennedy had some affinity on a personal basis, Kennedy decided to stay around on the bench for a little longer because I think he enjoyed that relationship. Now, consistent with our prediction, Judge Kennedy, a Reagan appointee, will retire. Now, I believe Judge Andrew Napolitano is a front runner. We know he was the emotional first pick of the president for the Gorsuch seat. His name is not on the list that was prepared by the Federalist Society, largely because he asked that it be taken off because of objections at Fox News under Roger Ailes at that time. But I really think he is a contender. The president gave him some indication of this back during the Gorsuch selection. And I don't think the president could make a better choice than Andrew Napolitano. Solid conservative, but with a libertarian bent, a pro-freedom bent, very much in the running, is what I hear.
Well, to be specific, President Trump said, you're my next pick if everything works out, round two. So would you say he's at the front of the pack, he's in the pole position?
Sure. Now, we know there are certain establishmentarians who will seek to block him, and the treachery inside the Trump White House knows no bounds. That's what's so ironic, is that the president has gotten so much of his agenda done, despite the fact that he has these whizzlings around him who are saying, oh, no, you can't cashier the Iran deal, Mr. President. You've got to sign the Paris Accords, Mr. President. But Trump sticks to his guns. He's one of the most stubborn men I know. And I mean that in a positive sense. When he makes up his mind to do something, he'll do it, and he cannot be talked out of it.
All right, back in 60 seconds to put some bookends on this. I want to be clear about Phil Mudd. I'm not somebody like him who talks about violence all day. And, you know, my great-great-grandfather wasn't the guy that, you know, helped shoot things on the back of the head. So I get, you know, he's a really bad guy. I'm just saying he wants to kill America's recovery. He's running around saying he's going to kill people. All right, finishing up with Roger Stone. In an hour, I'll be hosting the War Room with Owen Stroyer, just back from D.C. He was all over the hearings today. So many clubs I can't even get into it. But they, Jordan and Gowdy kept saying, well, did you ever send anybody to spy on Roger Stone? Did you ever send an informant, which we know they did, and Rosenstein was lying about it and everything? We're at such an epic moment here in history. I always don't want to be too confident, Roger. But it does seem like the worm's turning, not in some utopia, but at least we get some decent leadership that's trying to fix things. On your gut-level radar screen, what are you worried about? What are the curveballs? How do you think the deep state's going to strike back?
I just can't see them, Alex, ever handing over this information on the illegal, unconstitutional surveillance of Americans and the political use of the FISA warrant.
Let me interrupt you. You said on January 20th, outside the inauguration, before we went in and after, you said the illegal surveillance is the key to bringing it all down. It's 100 times better than Watergate. You said this is the key. Now that's all over the news. You were the trailblazer. It's just a fact. And so you're back to this. What is it Rosenstein will not turn over? Because he denied that he was even turning stuff over. I mean, he lied incredibly today.
This guy is a weasel. You can see it. We have him, thanks to Reince Priebus, probably the president's single worst appointment, Mr. Rosenstein. He is the de facto attorney general. But this surveillance is the cornerstone of this entire hijacking of an American election. If you pull out the cornerstone, it will all, though I should say the keystone, it will all collapse.
It's a linchpin.
And they know it. They know it. Because it completely exposes the effort by the Obama administration to wire the election for Hillary. This was the insurance policy that Stroke is talking about in his text messages. That's why I don't think Rosenstein will ever yield, which is why the president needs to fire him.
What do you make of the amazing revelation that Jim Jordan's staff and others have been threatened directly by Rosenstein, and then he lies and says he never did it, and Jordan's like, I've known these people for years. You did this. And then he makes a joke about, we don't subpoena phone calls. No, just the records, you little weasel.
I would say it's a very clear case of obstruction of justice. He is trying to thwart the legitimate oversight authority of the U.S. Congress. It just demonstrates their total lack of any respect for the rule of law. When the FBI director gives his little speech, which we played on the War Room, talking about their respect for oversight, they don't respect oversight. They thwart oversight.
Well, that's right. And we've got Fox News, AP, and others with copies of emails from Rosenstein saying, I'll subpoena you. And then he gets up and says, I didn't do that. But there's a little lawyer proviso. We don't subpoena phone calls. So, I mean, God, that is such an aggressive mooning of Congress, the American people, by Rosenstein. I mean, his bravado, his chutzpah is amazing.
Well, and if you look at the size of the cufflinks that the guy is wearing at these hearings, he clearly has not read Stone's rules.
How big should the cufflinks be?
Small. Understated is the key. Look, this guy just oozes insincerity. And we need a house cleaning at the Department of Justice. There's just no question.
Why does he think laughing at Congress and getting all his minions to laugh at Jordan? I mean, does he have no instinct that, like, going and lying? Like, I think he didn't get that he was being destroyed in delayed order today. I don't think I don't get the arrogance of these guys.
Well, but except for he's in it now. There is no turning back, because what he's covering up is the key to the entire abuse of power by the Obama administration. He's only nominally a Republican. He's actually in this job at the recommendation of Congressman Elijah Cummings. That's beyond belief.
No, I understand. So you're in the jaws of this most historic witch hunt in U.S., maybe world history. You know you're innocent. You know it's all, but they're not going to give up. So how do you, just in 60 seconds, we're going to the next co-host, how do you see this unraveling, or where do you see this going?
Well, it's very hard to know. On a personal basis, all I can do is try to build a war chest, because I know I'm going to a thermonuclear legal war, and they have the vast machinery and resources of the government. I sleep well at night because I know I've done nothing wrong. And I know that all of my political activities in 2016 to elect Donald Trump were perfectly legal. There is no Russian.
But I know what they were. It had nothing to do with Russia. It was reach black voters, reach women. I was involved. It had nothing to do with the Russians.
But, you know, why are they looking at my tax returns? Why are they looking at my financial records? Why are they asking questions about my family life, my relationship with my wife, my sex life, how much I drink, whether I smoke marijuana? Who cares? What does it have to do with the election?
Let me ask this selfishly, because you said like a third of the questions were about me even a few weeks ago. Other people told me that. Have they tapered off me? Because I heard this, like, me and films and Joel Gilbert now, like our films are evil.
Yeah, they're very focused on the documentary Vanished, the Danny Williams story, which first premiered here at InfoWars. 38 million Americans saw that. It was legally financed. It was legally promoted. And it was very successful. We're being penalized for effectiveness. We're being penalized because we supported Donald Trump. This isn't witch hunt. It's a political persecution. It has nothing to do with breaking the law. It has everything to do with silencing me, so that I can't come on.
I agree. Let's look at the president. He seems turbocharged, like he's winning. The energy level's way up, the peace deals, everything. Let's talk about Trump right now, and just knowing him for 40 years. It seems like Trump's going into his next mode, attack mode. I think they should be worried.
Well, his political capital has never been at this level, because we have a booming economy, and it's just going to get better. His corporate and personal tax cuts haven't even had a
chance. And we've got pro Supreme Court rulings, new Supreme Court nominations. I mean, he's like, wow, royal flush here.
So Alex Jones and Roger Stone are saying it's going to be Andrew Napolitano that's going in. And I believe they have the votes in the Senate to confirm that. And I believe the President Pence might have to come in there and vote down that 51-49 to get Andrew Napolitano. Now, let me tell you a story about Andrew Napolitano that I experienced firsthand. Is that back several years ago, when Ron Paul was on the campaign the second time, we all went up to Valley Forge, and I was sitting there. I couldn't do any video of Andrew Napolitano's speech, but so I was sitting there having lunch with everyone else there at the conference, in the rally, and in front of me, an Italian family came down and sat down. They had Napolitano books, and they had Ron Paul's books, and they sat down, very clean-cut family, and they were thrilled to have one of their own, an Italian-American, you know, there at the conference speaking to them. And so I thought to myself, this is really what America is all about. And so And I met him once, I believe, Andrew Napolitano, just briefly at that Valley Forge conference. And he's just really a fine person. And I've watched him on Fox over the years. And he gives very, very straight up, very objective commentary. And you can believe what he's saying. He's very confident in his knowledge of the law. And I think he would make an excellent Supreme Court justice. So that's what's going on right now. Now, what we have coming up next, okay, is we go back to December of last year, and Jim Jordan is quizzing Christopher Wray, FBI director, about Peter Strauss. Strauss, you know, the one that's been in this controversy and scandal lately. And so then I'm going to play that and then, you know, make a few comments, and then we're going to go in and play some further grilling and interrogation by Jim Jordan of Rosenstein, the Attorney General and Associate Attorney General. And then we're going to also Gowdy, okay? Gowdy, there's a clip that we're going to play with Gowdy doing the same thing with Rosenstein. They're just fed up. We have a resolution that came out last week of the House just demanding the documents from Rosenstein. Rosenstein is stonewalling. But you'll be able to hear that over these next three clips. The first one coming up would be Jim Jordan quizzing of Christopher Wray about Peter Strauss, what his job was there at the FBI. So listen carefully to this, and you'll see what I mean.
Director, was Agent Peter Strzok the former deputy head of counterintelligence at the FBI?
I don't remember his exact title, but I believe that's correct.
And he's the same Peter Strzok who was a key player in the Clinton investigation, the same Peter Strzok who interviewed Cheryl Mills, whom Abedin participated in the Clinton, Secretary Clinton's interview. And he's also the same Peter Strzok who, now we know, changed Director Comey's exoneration letter, changed the term gross negligence, which is a crime, to extreme carelessness. Is that the same guy?
Well, Congressman, I don't know every step that the individual you mentioned was involved in, but certainly I know that he was heavily involved in the Clinton
and he,
email investigation.
Thank you. And is this the same Peter Strzok who helped was a key player in the Russian investigation, and the same Peter Strzok who was put on Mueller's team, Special Counsel Bob Mueller's team?
I certainly know that he was working on the special counsel's investigation. Whether or not he would be characterized as a key player on that investigation, that's
okay,
really not for me to say.
And the same Peter Strzok that we learned this past weekend was removed from the special counsel team because he exchanged text messages with a colleague at the FBI that were displayed a pro-Clinton bias. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Talk about the same guy. Okay.
Yes.
Well, here's what I'm not getting. Peter Strzok is selected to be on Mueller's team after all this history, put on Mueller's team, and then he's removed for some pro-Clinton text messages. I mean, there are all kinds of people on Mueller's team who are pro-Clinton. There's been all kinds of stories. PolitiFact reported 96% of the top lawyers' contributions went to Clinton or Obama. But Peter Strzok, the guy who ran the Clinton investigation, interviewed Mills, Abedin, interviewed Secretary Clinton, changed gross negligence, a crime, to the term extreme carelessness, who ran the Russian investigation, who interviewed Mike Flynn, gets put on Mueller's team, and then he gets kicked off for a text message that's anti-Trump. If you kicked everybody off Mueller's team who was anti-Trump, I don't think there'd be anybody left. So there's got to be something more here. It can't just be some text messages that show a pro-Clinton, anti-Trump bias. There's got to be something more. And I'm trying to figure out what it is. But my hunch is it has something to do with the dossier. Director, did Peter Strzok help produce and present the application to the FISA court to secure a warrant to spy on Americans associated with the Trump campaign?
Congressman, I'm not prepared to discuss anything about a FISA process in this setting.
We're not talking about what happened in the court. We're talking about what the FBI took to the court, the application. Did Peter Strzok, was he involved in taking that to the court?
I'm not going to discuss in this setting anything to do with the FISA court applications.
Well, let's remember a couple things, Director. And I know you know this. We've all been made aware of this in the last few weeks. Let's remember a couple things about the dossier. The Democrat National Committee and the Clinton campaign, which we now know were one and the same, paid the law firm who paid Fusion GPS, who paid Christopher Steele, who then paid Russians to put together a report that we call a dossier full of all kinds of fake news, National Enquirer garbage. And it's been reported that this dossier was all dressed up by the FBI, taken to the FISA court, and presented as a legitimate intelligence document, that it became the basis for granting a warrant to spy on Americans. And I'm wondering if that actually took place. It sure looks like it did. And the easiest way to clear it up is for you guys to tell us what was in that application and who took it there.
Congressman, our staffs have been having extensive interaction with both intelligence committees on our interaction with the FISA court, and I think that's the appropriate setting for those questions.
Here's what I think, Director Wray. I think Peter Strzok, head of counterintelligence at the FBI, Peter Strzok, the guy who ran the Clinton investigation, did all the interviews, Peter Strzok, the guy who was running the Russian investigation at the FBI, Peter Strzok, Mr. Super Agent at the FBI, I think he's the guy who took the application to the FISA court. And if that happened, I mean, think if this happened, if you had the FBI working with a campaign, the Democrats' campaign, taking opposition research, dressing it all up and turning it into an intelligence document and taking it to the FISA court so they could spy on the other campaign, if that happened, that is as wrong as it gets. And you know what? Maybe I'm wrong. You could clear it all up. You could clear it all up for all of us here, all the Congress who wants to know, and frankly, all of America who wants to know. You could clear it all up by release. We sent you a letter 2 days ago. Just release the application. Tell us what was in it. Tell us if I'm wrong. But I don't think I am. I think that's exactly what happened. And if it did, it is as wrong as it can be. And people who did that need to be held accountable.
Congressman, we will not hesitate to hold people accountable after there has been an appropriate investigation, independent and objective, by the Inspector General into the handling of the prior matter. And based on that, I will look at all available remedies, depending on what the facts are when they are found. As to the access to the dossier, that's something that is a subject of ongoing discussion between my staff and the various intelligence committees.
There's nothing prohibiting you, Director. Is there anything prohibiting you from showing this committee the what was presented to the FISA court, the application you all put together at the FBI that was presented to the FISA court? Is there anything preventing you from showing us that?
The time the gentleman has expired, the director can respond.
I do not believe that I can legally and appropriately share a FISA court submission with this committee.
I'm talking about what the FBI put together, not what the court had. What you took there, what was the process put together, what you presented, what you took to the court.
When I sign FISA applications, which I have to do almost every day of the week, they are all covered with a classified information cover. So that's part of why
Director,
we would
is it
not
likely
be discussing
that Peter Strzok, is it likely that Peter Strzok played a part in the application presented to the FISA court?
The gentleman's time has expired. However, I do want to follow up on your last response to the gentleman. This committee, the House Judiciary Committee, has primary jurisdiction over the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court.
Yeah.
So any request for documents coming to any part of the Congress should include the House Judiciary Committee. And if it is classified in any way, shape, or form, it can be provided to us in a classified setting. But that is information that we are very much interested in.
Mr. Chairman.
Very much want to receive.
Just a question to the chairman. Yeah, I don't think there's anything prohibiting the FBI from giving us what they used to put together what was taken to the FISA court. That's what we're asking for. And there is nothing prohibiting him from doing that.
I don't think there is either. The time of the gentleman has expired, however. You care to respond to that, Director Gray?
No, I think I've covered it.
See, he just said that, yeah, he covered that all right. No, they didn't cover. They're covering up the Justice Department, Department of Justice, and both the FBI have been withholding and stonewalling these committees in Congress about providing them a document that they've requested months ago, half year, a year ago. And so they're getting fed up, and that's why last Friday the House enacted this this resolution demanding those documents. And by no later than the first week there in July, and if they're not going to get them, then they're going to go with a further contempt of Congress against Rosenstein or maybe impeachment against Rosenstein. So this is getting very, very dicey. And coming up next is another Jim Jordan clip of Rosenstein that he questions him. And here we go right now with that.
Chair recognizes the gentleman from Ohio, Mr. Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rosenstein, why are you keeping information from Congress?
Congressman, I'm not keeping any information from Congress that it's appropriate.
In a few minutes, Mr. Rosenstein, I think the House of Representatives is going to say something different.
I don't agree with you, Congressman. I don't believe that's what they're going to say. And if they do, they'll be mistaken.
I disagree, but I think in a few minutes, the House of Representatives is going to go on record saying you haven't complied with requests from a separate and equal branch of government, that you haven't complied with subpoenas, and you got 7 days to get your act together. I think that's what's going to happen in a few. And that's not Jim Jordan. I think that's the House. I think that's a majority of the House of Representatives. In just a few minutes, I think that's going to happen. And I want to know why you won't give us what we've asked for.
Sir, I certainly hope that your colleagues are not under that impression. That is not accurate, sir. And
it is accurate. We have caught you hiding
information, Mr. Chairman, can we allow the witness to answer? Mr. Chairman, point of order. We can go to Mr. Jordan's press conference and listen to him, but we came here to hear from the witness.
The time belongs to the gentleman.
Mr. Rosenstein?
Can we allow him to answer?
We have caught you hiding information.
Allow him to answer.
He will be permitted to answer when Mr. Jordan...
Why do we have them here?
We'll allow him additional time to answer.
Why are they not allowed to answer?
The gentleman is out of order. The gentleman from Ohio is recognized.
Mr. Rose, let me make this one point, then I'll let
you
answer.
Mr. Jordan, I'd like
to make this one point,
sir,
where we've caught you hiding information,
sir?
Then you can answer. Why did you hide the fact that Peter Strzok and Judge Contreras were friends? Why did you redact that in the documents you gave to us? Judge Contreras is kind of important. FISA court judge, more importantly, just as importantly, the judge that heard Mike Flynn's case. Why did you try to hide that from us?
Mr. Jordan, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to respond. I've heard you make those sort of allegations publicly on TV.
Mr.
Chairman, he should be given
right
the opportunity.
Now, Mr. Jordan,
it's redacted.
I am the Deputy Attorney General of the United States. Okay? I'm not the person doing the redacting. I'm responsible for responding to your concerns as I have. I have a team with me, sir. It's just a fraction of the team that's doing this work. And whenever you brought issues to my attention, I have taken appropriate steps to remedy them. So your statement that I'm personally keeping information from you, trying to conceal information...
You're the boss, Mr. Rosenstein.
That's correct. And my job is to make sure that we respond to your concerns. We have, sir. Now, I've appointed Mr. Lausch, who is managing that production. And my understanding is it's actually going very well, sir. So I appreciate your concerns.
Again, I think the House of Representatives is going to say otherwise.
But your use of this to attack me personally
is not
wrong.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman, may the witness be permitted to answer the question?
It's not personal.
The gentleman will suspend. The witness is going to have an opportunity to say whatever he wants at the end of Mr. Jordan's 5 minutes. Until the
it is not personal.
5 minutes, they're his time.
I appreciate your service. It's not personal. We just want the information. Why did you tell Peter Strzok not to answer our questions yesterday? When I asked Peter Strzok if he'd ever communicated with Glenn Simpson, he gave us the answer he gave us dozens of times. On advice of FBI counsel, I can't answer that question. Why couldn't he answer that question?
Mr. Jordan, I appreciate your sincere concerns, but I didn't give Peter Strzok any instructions. If there was some problem with the instructions he had, I'll be happy to look into it.
Not what his FBI lawyer said.
Mr. Jordan, when you find some problem with a production or with questions, it doesn't mean that I'm personally trying to conceal something from you. It means we're running an organization that's trying to follow the rules, and we're going to respond.
You know what was interesting? When I asked him if he'd ever talked to Bruce Orr, he said he had. Said he had three times in 2016 and 2017. Then I asked him, have you ever talked to Nellie Orr? And he said, no, I haven't. I said, well, why can you answer that question? Because Nellie Orr worked for Glenn Simpson, worked for Fusion. He could answer that question, but he couldn't answer because FBI counsel told him he couldn't. He couldn't answer the question whether he'd ever communicated with Glenn Simpson, a journalist. Why couldn't he answer that question?
Mr. Jordan, I appreciate you saying it isn't personal. Sometimes it feels that way. How do I know, sir? I mean, you interviewed Mr. Strzok. I didn't, so I can't
works
answer.
Works for you. Doesn't work for us.
There are 115,000 people who work for me, sir.
Mr. Rosenstein, did you threaten staffers on the House Intelligence Committee? Media reports indicate you did.
Media reports are mistaken.
Sometimes. But this is what they said. Having the nation's number one law enforcement officer threaten to subpoena your calls and emails is downright chilling. Did you threaten to subpoena their calls and emails?
No, sir, and there's no way to subpoena phone calls.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying. I'm reading what the press said.
I would suggest that you not rely on what the press says, sir.
Well, I didn't ask if there's no way to do it. I asked if you said it.
If I said what?
What I just read you.
No, I did not.
Well, now, who are we supposed to believe? Staff members who we've worked with, who've never misled us, or you guys, who we've caught hiding information from us, who tell a witness not to answer our questions, who are we supposed to believe?
Thank you for making clear it's not personal, Mr. Jordan.
Well, I didn't. I'm saying the
you
Department
believe
of Justice.
Me because I'm telling the truth and I'm under oath. If you want to put somebody else under oath and they have something different,
I know these staff members.
Respond.
Here's my last question. What's so important that you know that you don't want us to know, that you won't give us the documents we're asking for, that the House of Representatives is about ready to go on record saying you should give us? What's so darn important that you will threaten members, at least according to media reports and according to the staff members, threaten members?
Parliamentary inquiry, Mr. Chairman.
What is so important, Mr. Rosenstein?
Parliamentary inquiry, Mr. Chairman.
This is not an appropriate time for a parliamentary inquiry.
And point of order. The gentleman keeps representing that the House of Representatives, yes, it will be, the Republicans who continue
it's
to...
Not a, that is not an appropriate point of order.
Well, he needs to be correct in his
time,
statement.
The time of the gentleman... gentleman
will
be restored
the members
in a,
of the Republican the, Party.
The gentleman will suspend. The time of the gentleman from Ohio will be restored for an additional 15 seconds, and then the Deputy Attorney General will be allowed to respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rothstein, Mr. Ray, I do appreciate your work, but... I'd also appreciate if the House of Representatives could get the information. We have repeatedly, Mr. Gowdy talked about how long this investigation is going on, how long there's been a special counsel. We started asking for information in July of last year, and some of that is still not given, still has not been given to the Congress, still not has been given to this committee, the committee charged with defending the Judiciary Committee. So I appreciate what you do. I just want the information, and we're so frustrated that there is now a resolution on the floor of the House in just a few minutes that will be voted on.
Yeah, time of the gentleman has expired. Mr. Rosenstein will be allowed to respond.
I don't have any control over what resolutions you vote on, sir, and
I know you're
free to do that. But
the gentleman will suspend it. The time now is the Attorney General's.
If you're interested in the truth, Mr. Jordan, the truth is we have a team of folks. They're Trump appointees and career folks, and they're doing their best to produce these documents. Director Ray explained to you the process. He's got hundreds of people working around the clock trying to satisfy these requests. So whether you vote or not is not going to affect it. You're going to get everything that's relevant that we can find and produce to you. I support this report, sir. I'm not trying to hide anything from you.
These people are lying up there, and they're saying, well, you know, there are national security issues here, and we're not keeping anything from you. And they've been stonewalling these committees for well over a year on certain requests that they made for certain documents. They're lying. They're a bunch of liars. But this thing is getting big. It's getting real big, the scandal is. But the problem is that these committees are up more against just the deep state. They're up against an organization, something akin to Spectre in the 00 series. And that's what I see. This is an enormous, gigantic criminal organization. They're working across international borders now and lines, and they're making billions of dollars. And this has gotten so big and so corrupt, so criminal, that this is what I believe that everyone, we're all up against this right now, or they're trying to put us away, period. So listen to this second clip of Gowdy. He also confronts Rosenstein. So listen to this in just a second right here now.
The Russia investigation has been going on for almost 2 years now. Special counsel's investigation has been going on for over a year now. For most Americans, it's important to know what Russia did to our country in 2016 and with whom, if anyone, they did it. When a foreign state interferes with our democratic electoral process, it should be chance of a lifetime for a law enforcement agent to investigate that, except apparently the one that was actually picked to investigate it. That was Peter Strzok. FBI agent Peter Strzok was picked to lead the FBI's investigation into what Russia did in July of 2016. It was a counterintelligence investigation begun in late July 2016, and he was leading it, and at about the exact same time he was picked to lead it, this dispassionate and fair FBI agent was calling Trump a disaster, destabilizing for the country. I'll leave out all the F adjectives he used to describe that. I'll just go with disaster and destabilizing. Same time, his FBI lawyer girlfriend, Lisa Page, was telling him he was meant to protect the country. This neutral, dispassionate FBI agent said, I can protect the country at many levels. Same time, Peter Strzok, who was picked to objectively, fairly, neutrally look into the Russia investigation, was talking about an insurance policy with Andy McCabe and Lisa Page in the event Donald Trump became the president. All of this was happening at the same time Peter Strzok said he could smell the Trump support in Southern Virginia. All this was at the same time that this FBI agent said a Trump presidency would be effing terrifying and that it will never happen. No, no, we'll stop it. So while investigating Russia and their attempt to subvert our democracy may have been important to the rest of the country, it wasn't all that important to about a half dozen FBI agents and lawyers who were assigned to the case. For them, it was an investigation to stop Donald Trump, which then brings us to May of 2017 and the appointment of special counsel, where we find Peter Strzok again, this same supposed to be dispassionate, neutral, fair FBI agent. You would think he'd be really excited about investigating what a foreign power tried to do to this country. But you would be wrong again for Peter Strzok at precisely the same time that Bob Mueller was appointed. Precisely the same time. Peter Strzok was talking about his unfinished business and how he needed to fix and finish it so Donald Trump did not become president. He was talking about impeachment within 3 days of special counsel Mueller being appointed. 3 days. That's even quicker than MSNBC and the Democrats were talking about impeaching him. Within 3 days, the lead FBI agent is talking about impeaching the president. So this is where we are. We're 2 years into this investigation. We're a year and a half into the presidency. We're over a year into special counsel. You have a counterintelligence investigation that's become public. You have a criminal investigation that's become political. You have more bias than I have ever seen manifest in a law enforcement officer in the 20 years I used to do it for a living. And four other DOJ employees who had manifest animus towards the person they were supposed to be neutrally and detachedly investigating. Democrats are using this investigation as a presumption of guilt, which I find astonishing. And in the long run, for the health of this republic, I would encourage them to go back to the presumption of innocence that we used to hold sacred. There's a presumption of guilt. There's a desire by Democrat senators to fundraise off of your investigation. More than 60 Democrats have already voted to proceed with impeachment before Bob Mueller has found a single solitary damn thing. More than 60 have voted to move forward with impeachment, and he hasn't presented his first finding. So I'm going to say this to you, Mr. Ray, Mr. Rosenstein. I realize that neither one of you were there when this happened, but you're both there now. Russia attacked this country. They should be the target, but Russia isn't being hurt by this investigation right now. We are. This country is being hurt by it. We are being divided. We've seen the bias. We've seen the bias. We need to see the evidence. If you have evidence of wrongdoing by any member of the Trump campaign, present it to the damn grand jury. If you have evidence that this president acted inappropriately, present it to the American people. There's an old saying that justice delayed is justice denied. I think right now all of us are being denied. Whatever you got, finish it the hell up, because this country is being torn apart.
Yeah, they're just stonewalling. During that examination of Rosenstein and so forth, there was some reporting done by Fox, and this is a very, very good synopsis at the live time that the House was meeting of putting together and approving this resolution and demanding those documents. So I want you to listen to that because it gives you a little bit overall view here. So listen to this very carefully right now. Here we go. This Fox report.
Republican Congressman Chris Stewart, a member of the House Intelligence Committee. This got really chippy today, as we say in hockey. What are the points of news, the headlines that you're seeing here?
Well, it did get chippy, and it should be chippy. Oh, my gosh, can the FBI or DOJ make it any more frustrating? Can they make this any more longer and painful than they have? And it's completely unnecessary. So there's a number of lawmakers, myself included, who for a long time have been saying, look, we're not asking for something unreasonable here. We're asking for just pure accountability, that we have responsibility to provide the American people. And yet, like I say, it's like a death by a thousand cuts. to get Mr. Rosenstein and unfortunately, Mr. Ray in some cases.
You know, Congressman Stewart is, and you and I have talked about this before, but now it's full front and center. You've got Rosenstein, you've got Ray. I mean, you know, Ray is somebody the president supported. Why is it so difficult? I mean, not to pull politics into this, but just negotiating document releases and FISA applications. Why is it so hard?
Well, I think at the end of the day, and this isn't very difficult, at the end of the day, it's because they are embarrassed by their activities. And in some cases, I think they're trying to obfuscate or to at least make it very difficult for us what we believe is actually, in some cases, illegal activity. And that's just the simple explanation, but it's also the truth. And let me give you a real quick example of that. I mean, just one example. We had some material provided to us, a page and a half or so was redacted for issues of national security. And then when we finally get that information, it's about paying $70,000 for a conference table. It had nothing to do with national security. It was just embarrassing to them. That's one small example, but it's not an important example. The far more important examples are these meaningful questions about how they conducted their investigation, and yet they hide and they delay and they, it's kind of like hide the bunny. You know, we'll give you 880,000 pages of documents that Mr. Rosenstein mentioned today when we really only want a few hundred, and they make us, you know, burr our way through all of this other material, again, as a way to say, yeah, we've complied, but make it impossibly difficult for us.
So there are a couple of things going on here, and I, you know, as we talk about what is at stake, you've got a political party that paid for opposition research with the company that had some interesting ties to important people at the DOJ, a wife of a member, so on and so forth. You've got an FBI, two agents, with their hands all over a couple of investigations. One, the Hillary Clinton email investigation. Did she get special treatment because of what they were carrying out? And also their text messages going back and forth, showing us clearly that they had a plan to keep the president out of the White House. So as we watch this today, what do you want to see asked? I mean, I know you're in House Intel and you guys are perched watching the Judiciary Committee today. What are you watching for?
Well, there's a couple things. One of them is, you know, that we've been told again and again and again that this inquiry into the Russian supposed Trump collusion started at the end of July. And if that's true, then let us understand this. Did you run informants into the campaign previous to that? Because there's certainly indications that they did, and not just one, but perhaps several, maybe even many. And if you were doing that previous to July, on what basis were you doing that? Show us the evidence. Show us the concern that you had. And that's the thing that we're focusing on now, and that's very important. For one thing, does it show that they've been honest with us? And the second thing is, if everything they've told us up to this point isn't true, and they had information previous to that, once again, what was it, or was there any? But, you know, if I could just make this kind of general observation. We can't live in a country where we give the Department of Justice enormous power, and especially into something like an opposition political campaign, and say, go do what you want, send spies, eavesdrop, listen to messages, and read text, and then don't come tell us. We don't want to know. No one wants to live in a country like that, that you would give them that kind of power and no accountability, especially, like I said, into a political campaign, a presidential campaign. All we're asking is that they be honest with the American people.
You know, I have to be honest, as we watch this and I see on social media, people don't understand, is this the way you get information? They see hearing after hearing, deposition after deposition. Some are private, some are full-blown public like today. And the question is, will there ever be accountability? Congressman Stewart, thank you for being with me for this.
You.
We'll continue to bring you live all of the action that happens on Capitol Hill today with that.
This thing is bad. It's very, very bad. Now, coming up next is George Webb. He's been uncovering a lot of scandal. He doesn't quite know what he's uncovered yet, but he's uncovered the Spectre operation worldwide. But listen to this, and we're going to end the program with this. Listen to this carefully.
Okay, good morning, everyone, or good afternoon now, I guess, for folks on the East Coast. So today is going to be a day one, in a way. It's day 622 for those of who have been with me for 622 days along my journey here to really just get to the truth about aspiring in Congress. And Truth Leaks is sort of my handle. I'm George Webb. I'm a street journalist, a YouTube street journalist here in Washington, D.C. Not many of those around still. But anyway, the basic idea here of my long journey over 622 days, almost 2 years, is to try to get a spy ring out of our Congress. Now, this spy ring you haven't heard about probably unless you know somebody called the Awan brothers, but it's actually a much bigger spy ring, and we're going to go into that. We'll explain how that, why the spy ring is in place. It's to get weapons to different groups around the world, terrorist groups in some cases. So we'll get to how a covert weapons business is implemented here in Congress, why it's implemented here in Congress, to explain to you how something like this could happen right here on our dome of our U.S. Capitol, on these U.S. Capitol grounds. The first thing is, well, you say, well, if there's a spy ring, what would they get? They would just get a whole bunch of email from a whole bunch of groups and so forth that are coming to visit. You can see over here, groups are coming to visit. Let's say there's a whole bunch of miners coming, and a lot of times we've talked to miners right over here in these different house buildings right here, or they could be over there at the Senate buildings. Let's say they're from Oregon. That's where I spent a lot of my time, raised my family of two. And they're all from all these different remote parts of Oregon. They come to make a proposal here in Oregon about, hey, we want to have an Oregon, some kind of legislation to help us develop our mining capability with the new ability that some mining technique or something like that, or reduce regulation on the mining industry or whatever. If I intercept that email with all the list of all the people, and I can look up all their farms, I can look up all their ranches, a nefarious person, a nefarious spy ring that wanted to infiltrate into the United States from another country could use that to attack those farmers. If you remember the Lavoie-Finicum case in Oregon, that's exactly what happened. About 2,000 different farms and ranchers were, I believe, have been targeted in what's known as the Uranium One scandal. So, the other thing is that you also have what's called the Congressional Research Service over here at the Library of Congress. Any congressman that's interested in any business could ask the Congressional Research Service for any one of 96 departments in our government to do some special research. Could you overlay the caribou population in Alaska, let's say, over the top of the map of all the known oil reserves? Well, you throw the caribou out when you get, you know, you're just looking for where are the different reserves, and then that becomes a target. Those people become targets. The same thing can be true for mining as well, or any resource like trees and forestry and so forth. But mostly it's in the energy business, because that's where you get the biggest bang for the buck. The top, most expensive metals like uranium, when you refine them and purify them, obviously the most valuable, so that tends to be, in the United States anyway, that's why I took the example of the uranium miners, or people just or that are farmers or ranchers that have uranium on their land. So, and a lot of this stuff is still historical record for when we had a Manhattan Project in the United States. The U.S. Geological Survey did exactly that. They surveyed all the country to find where the deposits were. So that information is also historically available. And they also do a survey around the world. The USGS does a survey around the world. Now, you combine that with a program that we had called Atoms for Peace, which was using nuclear technology, small nuclear explosions, not big ones, to actually cause fissures and do actual excavating, more overseas, but still was used in the United States for a while in the 50s. That also can be used. In combination with satellite technology, you can see where there's fissures and so forth and use that in mining technology. So when people think that there's no value in the attachments of the email that people have, especially in the committees of the Foreign Affairs Committee, that would be the type of information I was talking about, energy markets type information, drug, food and drug, different new molecules, small molecules that are being developed at the FDA. You could steal those. Those take 10 years to approve into a new drug. You could send it to an overseas drug company like Vero Pharma in Russia and have them be working on a drug and maybe even announce it before the drug's announced here in the United States. So it's this kind of economic spying that I'm talking about right now. That's the main use of an economic spy ring. But you can also use it, like we've talked with everyone who's familiar now with Crossfire Hurricane and the current Spygate that President Trump talks about, you could also use it to get control of the House. You could get control of your cabal of senators over there. So you could have a committee that sells weapons, for instance, called the Senate Armed Services Committee. You could make an agreement across the aisle. Hillary Clinton and a Joe Biden on the Democratic side could agree with Lindsey Graham and McCain on the other side. I just met somebody from the McCain campaign last night, by the way. And you could then say, hey, let's control this. Let's put a spy ring in. We'll spy on all the other senators and so forth. We'll get our projects. I'll scratch your back. You scratch mine. That's exactly what happened over the last 20 years. I'm going to show you that since 9/11. The same thing happened over here on the House side, or this is the actual House of Representatives where they meet. Same thing happened on the House side with Paul Ryan on the Republican side, Debbie Wasserman Schultz on the Democratic side. Before that, there was Rahm Emanuel. And so Rahm Emanuel really becomes the kind of the control point here, and sort of John McCain and Mitt Romney and that whole group is this side. Now, where this story started with me was really in the election. So I started seeing spying, not necessarily related to Congress, that was happening in the election. And it was around, most people remember the Huma Abedin server and Anthony Weiner's laptop and so forth. And I thought, well, why would Anthony Weiner have all these emails from the State Department? Well, it's for exactly the same reason I said about the congressional information. That information is very valuable to people in the financial markets. It's coming from Washington. I started looking at all the news, as well as, you know, from the DNC, and I had a background with a company called McAfee and Associates, with a guy by the name of Dmitry Alperovich. And I knew Dmitry Alperovich to be a hacker. He brought in 12 folks from Russia, and all we did at my old company back at McAfee was write viruses so they could sell virus software at the end of a quarter. When I found out that Dmitry Alperovich at CrowdStrike was the one doing the investigation at the DNC, I immediately smelled a rat. I immediately said, it's not the Russians. It may be the Russians, but it's Dmitry Alperovich's Russians, not some Russians that Trump knows or did some kind of collusion deal with. And it's really right then, I mean, immediately I knew that there was something wrong here with CrowdStrike. So I started looking for a spy ring in Congress. I identified this company that was called DynCorp, and they had a very strong relationship with the CIA in selling these weapons. They had all the contracts for planes and helicopters and so forth for training people to do all kinds of battle maneuvers as well as supply maneuvers. And that's a perfect position to be in, and they have been caught many, many times illegally trafficking weapons and being a part of these covert weapons programs. I was looking for, literally looking for a spy ring in Congress before this Iwan scandal ever broke. I was doing DynCorp shows in the last 660 days or 22 days. I've done about 3,000 videos, believe it or not. So I was looking for a spy ring in Congress before the Iwan scandal ever broke. The Iwan scandal, which is these two brothers, we'll start with two. There's ends up being six, but we'll start with two. Ends up that they, Omar Awan working for Paul Ryan, and then Imran Awan working for Debbie Wasserman Schultz, seem to have made the same kind of deal in the House, as far as weapons, a covert weapons program, as they had made over in the Senate with Hillary Clinton and John McCain and Dianne Feinstein. There's other people that I'm leaving out here, but on this side would be Nancy Pelosi. But the same idea. There's a cabal, a very small cabal at the top that maintains power by spying on other people in the House. So you end up with a Nancy Pelosi here at 80 years old running the House as far as the minority over here. You end up with somebody like Dianne Feinstein that's 80 years old running over there because they have this spy ring capability. And they try to basically blackmail or embarrass or compromise, however you want to say it, all the other junior members until these other members show their loyalty to the fealty, if you will, to the leaders, and then they can advance. And that's kind of how the game is played here in Washington. And if you're not on the team, basically something happens. You're taken out by some kind of compromise. So that's the other part of the spying business. There's the economic spying, and I'll use the Library of Congress to show that. But then there's also the political spying to control the House. And that's to spying on the other members. And indeed, we have Imran Awan that I mentioned earlier, this Pakistani guy who's making $160,000 a year, but he's working 9 months of the year, 3 to 9 months out of the year, in Pakistan. So it's obvious that he's administrating these systems. It's all fact, no speculation, that all this data is going to Pakistan. Terabytes. We say terabytes and diamonds in a little song we wrote for this series. Because there's so many valuable, we're using diamonds as a placeholder for all these valuable things that we could send from the House, from the Library of Congress. Okay, so that gives you kind of an idea of what's going on here. Now, we really couldn't call it a spying in Congress, even though folks that quoted me about a year ago saying that was conspiracy theory, the Washington Post, New York Times, CNN. Now it is a spying in Congress. We've had people come forward from these offices that work here, one called the Chief Office or Chief Administrative Officer. It's like a CIO, Chief Information Officer, only it's a Chief Administrative Officer. It's a guy by the name of Phil Kiko. Phil Kiko works directly for Paul Ryan. And he has now, we have people that have come forward and talked about how equipment was sent and diverted to Pakistan, sent and diverted, stolen equipment and so forth, iPhones and so forth that can have spyware on them that can help you spy on other people, your comrades. So in this case, you could have Hillary people or Hillocrats, as I call them, spying on the Bernie-crats, right? You could run all these progressive candidates, but then you could be sending phishing emails to those folks so that the money goes to the Hillocrats instead of the Bernie-crats, etc. That's exactly what I allege in a lawsuit I filed against the DNC because I was a Bernie supporter. And sorry it's so windy here. I don't have a windsock. I want you to be out here. This is a soft launch. This isn't the launch of spyringincongress.com, but we're going to launch a website. We're going to actually do a book and tell this story because now we have the proof that there is a spying in Congress. As we look over here, there's three different buildings on the House side that you can see. There's the Cannon office building, the Longworth office building, and the Rayburn office building. Paul Ryan is in the Rayburn office building. In this series, we've had our hero, Imran Awan, actually caught in a phone booth. In a phone booth where his bag has Debbie Wasserman Schultz's computer and it has two removable hard drives in there with not only his ID, but also the ID of his father and Debbie Wasserman Schultz's label. So this isn't something that we're speculating on, and it's being the different crime reports, the different basic police reports are being suppressed. So you know that there's state support. You know that there's support from both the House side and the Senate side, both from the Republican side and the Democratic side to quash this. Now, yesterday, there was a researcher I worked with, and I gave her the nickname Task Force because she's currently in a witness protection program. She's had some reprisals from the person who ran these servers over here. A reprisal by the name of a guy named Becerra in California, who's the current attorney general. But she feels like there's been direct reprisals against her from Mr. Becerra. And he actually ran the servers right over there in the Cannon office building. That's been identified now. We actually have serial numbers of what those were. And the Capitol Police have not been able to find those servers. Much like the DNC story, much like the Hillary Clinton story, where things get broken, the things get, they go missing. The server, the famous caucus server, the Cannon caucus server over there, went missing in this story. There was also 20 burglaries the night of the inauguration. The night of the inauguration, somebody goes in and collects all these phones. The reason why they would do that is because that has the footprints. That has the evidence of all these emails that you might have sent. Economic spying emails, right, as well as the political emails, right? So that's where we are. In the Longworth office building there, you've got Debbie Wasserman Schultz. You've also got kind of a hierarchy of people. You've got Joe Crowley, who was the Democratic whip, who just lost his seat. So this is a sort of a spy ring that's collapsing. This is kind of sort of a house of cards that's sort of collapsing. And everybody who was involved kind of wants to get out of it. Paul Ryan has decided not to run again because he realizes there's a direct line from Omar Awan to Phil Kiko to him. And we've served, through this help of this researcher named Task Force, we've served Imran Awan in this case. Now we're also going to serve Omar Awan, who also goes by the name of Abid. And this, again, is P people inside the House Committee on Administration, inside the CAO's office, that have said, yes, this did happen. These phones were illegally purchased, and this isn't just a case of Imran Awan sending a whole bunch of equipment to Pakistan.